Off the Ball Daily.
This interview with you and I can go any way you want it to go. You can ask me any question you want. Nobody from my PR team is ever going to call somebody from the media and say, don't ask Dana this.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
This is Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
We're delighted to say good morning to Mona McSharry, Olympic bronze medalist. Mona, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good. How has the recovery slash come down been since the Olympics has finished?
It's been pretty good. So I went back to America for 2 weeks there, or 10 days, I guess, after the Olympics. And that was nice because I could just kind of relax and just chill, kind of get back into a little bit of normalcy, walk my dog and just calm down from after the games. And now I'm back home again. And it's nice to be back here and excited to enjoy kind of reliving some of it and homecomings and the whole lot of it.
When you finished the Olympics, did you spend long in Paris? Were you actually able to kind of enjoy the city a bit? Because it was so on fire from the games that it was a brilliant personal experience for anybody who was there. What was that like for you?
It was, yeah, we got a decent amount of time actually when we were done. We were there until the Thursday, so we had three kind of full days, I guess four full days after I was done racing to kind of explore. Now, I'll say I was very tired. I don't think I got half the stuff done I had planned to do because I was just a little bit drained. But we walked around Paris. We sat outside at a couple of coffee shops and, you know, got in a little bit, went to see the Eiffel Tower. So I'm definitely happy with, you know, getting to explore a little bit outside the village. And then I got 2 days off in Germany, which was nice, and then back for the closing ceremony. So I think I got a good, touch on everything.
Champions Park was this new thing that they had this year where they got medalists to come back and just hang out with a crowd, not to do anything except dance and sing songs and take pictures. And I've done no justice to it in that description. It kind of sounds, what was that? But actually, it was fairly incredible.
Yeah, no, it was a really cool experience, and obviously never heard of it before because it hasn't happened before, but definitely a lot of fun to kind of gather with the other swim, and you go out together with a group of swimmers. So you kind of know some people and some other swimmers, and you'd be lining up, walk out. And I got to hang out with my brother and sister for a little bit. And then my parents were also out in the crowd watching. So it was definitely a really nice experience, kind of just adds to the enjoyment of winning a medal and gets to all these little exciting things.
And the fact that Daniel Wiffen was there as well, we were incredibly well represented. I think you were there the same day as the rowers too, is that right?
Yeah. I think, and Reese, all the medal winners up to that point, so it would have been Monday, so before Kelly had won her medal, but the rest of us all went together and kind of were able to do it together. So that was nice.
Is that a real thing, the whole Irish team, or are you all in such bubbles individually, considering like everything that you've been doing for the last, well, in your case, since you were a teenager, is coming down to the minute and a half. How real is the sense of being part of a bigger, wider team of gymnasts and boxers and everybody else who are there?
I think it's very real. Like, I don't know if you'd feel it as much on maybe a bigger team, but because there's, I don't want to say it's so few of us, like there's still 153 odd athletes. So there's a lot of us, but like, I feel like we're a very close knit community, and definitely for all the people in the village, I felt like, you know, you'd be watching boxing upstairs with, you know, other athletes, other runners, other, like, so we were always kind of coming together and watching different events when we had days off. And then you kind of would, you'd bump into someone and they'd be like, oh, I seen your swim. Well done. You know, so it was, I definitely felt like people were invested in my races and I felt invested in theirs, which was really nice. And then when the rowers came from where they were staying, like I felt like we then got to connect with them. So there definitely is a lot of unity. And even though you have your small group of, for me, swimmers, like you're still making friends outside of that, and you are hanging out with other people, which is nice.
The rowers know how to party, it turns out.
They do indeed. But I remember that from like before as well. Like it's always good fun with the rowers.
Yeah. This is a totally different experience from Tokyo, obviously, where it's a COVID games. And I don't know, I have no sense of what that must have been like from your perspective as an athlete, where this is supposed to be a crowning moment. And you did brilliantly. You reached the final. How do you compare and contrast the two now in retrospect, knowing what an Olympics is really supposed to be like?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, I think I felt so much support after the Tokyo Olympics, and even like during it making it to a final, that at that time that was the most support and the most investment I'd ever experienced from the country in my racing. And so I thought that was great. And then you like multiply that by like 10 for what I experienced in Paris, because, you know, you still have all of that support from people at home, but you also have so many people that traveled out to watch, that I wouldn't even know. And obviously my parents are feeding me all this information just of like people that like are looking for tickets outside, and they were met these other people, and this person's over and this person's over. And so it's just so exciting to be able to experience that extra step. Like, not only are basically the whole country's tuning in at home, but then you have so many people that also want to come over and watch it live, which is really exciting. 'Cause, you know, I'm just off in my own world kind of training for this, like I would train for any other competition. But then to know that everyone's all excited and wants to come and watch it is cool.
Mona, would you say your life has changed much in the past couple of weeks?
It hasn't. There's definitely some aspects of it that have shifted a little, due to being a medalist. I think, you know, that definitely is, it's a big thing. But when you get back to reality, I feel like it's the same as well, which is nice. But yeah, a bit of both, I guess.
Have you thought much about how your life would have been different if it had been a couple of hundredths of a second the other way? Like, it's, the margins are ridiculously fine.
Yeah, and I feel like I've had a little bit of a year this past year where I've had a couple of those races where the margins have been quite tight and I've just been on the wrong side of it. And I know how it felt in that moment. And I was always able to kind of turn around and go, okay, but that's not the main goal of this year. Like, we're training for the Olympics. So I couldn't even imagine how it would feel to be on the, you know, fourth side of that, like be touching fourth and then, you know, having to be like, okay, well, this is what I trained for this whole year. But you know, it just shows that all the hard work and the dedication and maybe those other moments had to happen for this to happen. And you know, yeah, that's sport. You're not always going to end up on the right side of it. And it's so tough in the moment, but you kind of have to remember that there's always going to be another race. And I mean, there's two fourths in that swim, like the Italian and Lily King, and by 0.01, which is just so tight. So that's obviously really tough for them too. You know, we all know each other and we're all on any given day, it could be any one of us touching the wall. But that's what makes it exciting. You know, you're never out and you're never in. You kind of just have to get up there on the day and race and see what happens. Like, 1 to 8, everyone has a shot. Like, it's so close.
That whole really terrible cliche about you have to enjoy the journey and it can't just be about outcomes. Like, you really have to. Because if it was just about outcomes, you would go completely crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like people tune in for the 1%, but you have the 99%, which is, you know, the rest of the time that you're training and you're committing yourself to specific things you have to do. You're going to bed early. You're always working hard Monday to Saturday, 50 weeks of the year. So it's you have to really enjoy the grind and the process of, you know, tune in your body to be the best it can be at that one given moment. And that's what I've kind of learned over the last couple of years, that's what you have to enjoy, and put all your effort into enjoying, because that'll make the performances, you know, come. And they won't always come, but like, you're definitely going to be more likely to be able to deal with them better if you know that you look back on the year and you go, yeah, but sure, I had a great time. And I have had a great time this last year, just trying to get those little bits and working really hard. Like, that was the benefit of being able to qualify in the summer of 23, as I knew I was going. And so I could kind of just put my head down and work really hard for that year and not have to focus on tapering or racing, and knowing that when Olympics came, that's the time that I have to race. And you have to put a lot of trust in yourself then too, because you know, you're not going to be going fast throughout the year because you're training and you're pushing your body, but that's just the part of sport.
So you do enjoy the training and the hard stuff?
Yeah, I think probably the most. I like going in. I'm pretty dedicated and diligent, so I quite enjoy going in and just working hard. and, you know, pushing my body to be the best it can be. And having, sometimes having a training session that doesn't go well is nearly worse than having a race that doesn't go well sometimes. But just knowing that you can come in again tomorrow and do even better, and, you know, watching the progression throughout the year, and seeing yourself doing the same sets over and over, and, you know, the progression that you see is just, that's the fun part of sport, you know?
Did you have that when you were a kid with Grace Mead in Ballyshannon? Did you have that desire to get up every morning and go training, or were your mum and dad roosting you out of bed at 4:30? Come on, why do we have to get you up every morning?
You know, there definitely was a few mornings. I don't want to say there was none where I didn't want to get up at 4:30 or whatever it was. But for the most part, I loved it. Me and Grace had a great time, and, you know, she'd push me really hard, and we'd always have some fun but challenging sets. And they were always really specific to me, which I loved. I kind of always knew, that's the one thing, is like, I like to know why I'm doing something. You know, why is this making me better? What is the goal here? And then once I know that, I'm all in. And so, no, I used to love it, and I still do, you know, like getting up and going hard.
And what age were you when you decided that you were going to take it seriously?
We started really focusing, like doing more than what the club would have been doing, and kind of tailoring to my own interests, was probably around 2015. So I would have been about 14 or 15. We kind of started putting more effort into it, I guess. Before that, I would have just been swimming with the club, and doing the odd bit on the side, like a little bit of circuits or some gym or whatever, but nothing crazy. But then at that point, I think I went to European Games that summer and made a semi-final in the 50 breaststroke or something, first international semi-final, and came back after that summer and sat down with the coaches, and Grace Mead from the club was like, I'll commit to helping you. And like, I wouldn't have been able to do it without her. Like, the amount of hours that she put in, not even just coaching me, but outside of that, learning and trying to get better. Cause that, like, was the first time either of us had ever competed at that level and built up throughout the ranks. So it was a really nice journey, because we were both kind of new to it, you know, like racing internationally, competing at Europeans, competing at World Juniors, like all of that. Like, it was both our first time. So that was really exciting for both of us, I think.
It is a bit mad that there's not really much of a frame of reference that you can rely on, but everybody coming after you now sees a pathway from a small pool in Ballyshannon all the way to the La Défense Arena and a bronze medal. And I wonder, have you tuned into just that whole part of it yet, and how you can tell everybody this story now, and like Grace's story, as you say, you know, uncovering her own coaching genius in the middle of all this is it's really remarkable.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I know it, but you don't think about it that often. Like, when you put it like that, it's so impressive, like where I came from and how far I've come from there. Like, just thinking back even to what I used to do, you know, like competing at community games or going to an Ulster short course championships or something, and then being able to move through the rounds, and then not only like traveling with teams and, you know, competing at Worlds or competing at the Olympics, but actually like making it into finals and then getting medals. Like, it's just the stepping stones. And I mean, you can do it from anywhere if you're committed to doing it and you have a team around you that's committed to it as well. You know, like you can't do it alone, but if you have people that you trust, and a program that you really enjoy, you can do it from anywhere. So that's, you know, it's, I'm excited that I can kind of be, like you said, like a reference that people can look back and, like, yeah, okay, I can do it. Because of course, you know, it wasn't easy back when we had to start framing and putting sessions in, and like the club wasn't offering enough, so you'd do stuff outside of the club. And so for some people, they think that that's it, like they can't get anything else. But you know, you can add in extra outside of maybe what's offered. You don't always have to look at moving somewhere else, because I love my family, and couldn't have even imagined at 15 or 16 trying to move away from home to go somewhere else just to train. You know, I was glad that I was able to stay here until I was 20 and train. And then of course I went to America for college. That was like the next natural step, was moving over there. But up until that point, I was training out of Ballyshannon.
And even the maturity to stay until you're 20, as opposed to going at 18, when the homesickness must have been pretty bad anyway at 20, but at 18, it could have it could have killed your career. Like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, well, I was in school until I was 19. I was an older, like, so I wouldn't have left anyway until then. And then COVID kind of messed up. Well, wanted to take the year off just before the Olympics to make sure that I wasn't moving into a new program then, but COVID shuffled all that around. But yeah, no, I think being a little bit older definitely helped with moving away, because it was hard. Like, I was away the first time I've been away that long, and it was 8 months, you know, on a different time zone. And yeah, you can call and FaceTime, but you're really on a different schedule. And it's hard, but you know, once you kind of get into the swing of things, and you know, you're training and doing all the schoolwork and stuff, you don't really have much time to be homesick. You're kind of just so busy, which is nice. And you know, you have a routine, so it's not too bad.
When you got to Tennessee, was it a culture shock in terms of the level of work and commitment, or had you actually been very well prepared already so that it was okay, that transition?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the work was harder. The biggest culture shock was training with a big team. I was always someone that is very shy, very hard to kind of integrate into a group of people I don't know. And so, like, I had been quite used to training with just two or three other people. And whenever I'd travel away with Irish teams, like, very quiet, very reserved. And so moving over there and then having to kind of throw myself into a group of 70 people that I don't know, and are all very kind of outgoing, extroverted. Like, Americans are very, very bubbly, very happy, very chatty. And so it was definitely hard at the start. And, you know, now I think it's probably helped me. People have said that, like, coming home here, people have said that I'm definitely a lot more chatty when we first travel away with the Irish team, whereas I used to not be like that. But that was probably the hardest part for me, was just trying to, like, do my work and, like, train, but then also try and socialize with all these other people as well. But no, it was great. Like, the team is just great, and they have all these great facilities, and everything is so close, which is really nice. And doing college is quite easy. You know, it's not easy, but they make it as easy as possible because it's integrated into the swim team. You know, you get kind of some leeway, not even just for competing at college meets, but then also, you know, like, I've had to travel every summer, and I've taken classes every summer, and I've never had any problems with any professors. Like, they're all very understanding, which I think helps a lot, because you don't want to have to, you don't need these extra hindrances when you're trying to compete, and then also be like, oh Jesus, I have to get this school assignment done and this done, and they're not going to understand if I don't do it on time. Like, so it's been really helpful the last 4 years.
When you started out in Tennessee, Mona, was there any element of, I'm gone from being a big fish in a, like, quite a small pond, literally, to being a small fish in a very, very big, vast pond?
Yeah, definitely. And it's honestly great. Like, it was hard to get used to a little bit at the start, because coming from a big fish, small pond, I'm good at everything, or almost the best at everything. And I like to be the best. Like, everyone likes to push their body to be the best. And so moving to a program where you're really maybe not the best in a lot of things, you know, you're not the fastest kicker, you're not the fastest freestyle swimmer, like, you're not always at the front of the lane, and you don't lift the most weight, you know, and then you're striving now in all these different areas where there's, you know, someone that might be better than you. And so it just pushes you that little bit further, which is really nice. But it was definitely something I had to get used to, that, like, just because I'm not the best doesn't mean I'm failing. You know, I can get better at that, and I'll push myself, and this is actually a good thing. Like, them being faster than me is a good thing, because it'll push me to be faster. And then I think getting better at, and I've always been pretty good at this, because I rarely would have traveled to competitions with Grace growing up. Like, she never would have been on Irish team trips, and so I'm pretty independent when it comes to knowing what I need to do. But then also during training sessions on a day-to-day basis, being okay with the fact that, like, you're not going to get as much one-on-one time with the coach, because they have, you know, 70 odd other athletes that they're watching and looking at, and getting better at kind of knowing that you need to be able to understand yourself, what you need to do, and kind of self-discipline a little bit, which is good. So
I'd imagine your eyes were open to, like, your goals change, and all of a sudden, as you say, you're top of the class and everything. then all of a sudden you're not. So you have to, you're striving for improvements in so many areas then as well, because you have, well, all these people are setting, they're almost changing targets for you.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think it's not even the big like goals, you know, like making an Olympic medal, like that was always there, or like making the Olympic team, like that was always there beforehand. But it's definitely, it's the smaller goals. It's like the, oh, well, you know, I thought my underwaters were good enough, you know, but they're actually not. Like you've got five other people that are beating you on underwater. So now they have to be better. Or, you know, I thought my pull was good, but it's actually not. And so it forces you to kind of look at things that you thought were okay. And they probably were okay, but they can be better. And you know, you can always be better at different things. And it's nice too, like we have a great environment for teaching and learning. So like, you don't even have to ask a coach. You could ask another athlete, hey, look, like, can we stay 5 minutes after? And you just talk me through how you do that, and see if we can make it better. And so that's, you know, we're one big team. And even though like when you go internationally, we might be competing against each other, like you're still a big team and you're trying to help each other get better. And I'll teach you something, you teach me something, or like I'll support you during this fast set and you support me when I need help, you know? So it's the team dynamic is just so great. I think probably haven't experienced something quite like that in Ireland, just because we train in an individual sport that never really comes together that often. But for college competing, like you're racing for the team, like you're racing to score points for the team. Like it's not really like winning individually is not really as important as winning for the team. So it creates this team dynamic in a sport that before that was quite individual for me. So it's nice.
And can you actually pinpoint some of that stuff that helped you to get that 100th of a second at the end?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just about, for me, definitely like racing towards the end, you know, like really pushing yourself further than you ever have. And I'd say the biggest part of that would be racing teammates in training, you know, and like pushing till the end, or like trying to catch someone to the end. And then also, I would say like my turns have gotten better. I thought my underwaters had gotten better, but then watching myself against some other competitors at the Olympics, I've realized they're not that good. So I'll have to go back to the drawing board on that again, which is, you know, there you go. That's interesting. Like something that I thought I had actually improved, but then you watch against Tatiana and the Chinese girl who has really good underwaters off the blocks. You see that and then you're like, okay, actually I can be better. I can do that. So I got to figure out how to get there. But I'd say just like I've been focusing a lot on finishing races strong and not spinning. And that definitely helped towards the end of that race. Like, and again, it's a lot of really, really hard training, that pushed me to be able to be so strong at the end of a race and knowing that I can finish that strong.
When you use the word spinning there, what does that mean?
You go really high, tempo or like rate. So more strokes per second, which doesn't benefit me because the way that I move fast through the water is my kick. So the more I spin, the less water I'm catching as I go. And the less time I'm allowing myself to kind of dive forward when I kick. So there's a nice sweet spot. And then when I go too high, of a rate, you lose that. And for some people it works. Like, you see some athletes that will work really good at a high tempo and they'll be really good at the 50 then as well. But for me, I'm better a little bit lower tempo.
Am I right in saying that the World Championships was a very similar race with a totally different outcome because you fixed the finish?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That was definitely another really close race. And I think, I guess, you think you're, it kind of shows you that you have to like race until the end. Not that I would have really held off at Worlds or like slowed down thinking I was doing okay, but sometimes you can't really see what's going on around you. And it kind of leads you to be like, okay, yeah, we're swimming. But then, you kind of have to be like, no, I need to go now. Like I need to, every single stroke needs to be perfect, like hitting the line and throwing everything forward to make sure, because it can be that close. And then, you look back and you go, well, that was maybe two or three strokes that I hit soft at the line. And that could have been a different outcome. So it's definitely those little things, you know, like you can't really switch off for a second, but then also you kind of have to trust that, when you do switch off, you're falling back to the level of training that you've done. And so if the level of training you've done has been practicing to hit the line hard and aggressive for the last year, you're going to do that in a race, like even without thinking about it. So I think that's been kind of the change there. And then also I've done a lot of mental preparation, more so than I ever have before this year. A lot of visualization, imagining the race in a lot of different scenarios. And so I think that that's helped too, because I kind of knew exactly what, and it wasn't a perfect race by any means, even swimming it. So, you know, there's definitely room for improvement, but I think being able to visualize it and practice going through it helped a lot. With kind of when you switch off and you're just in race mode, you're falling down to what you've prepared for.
I think Jim Gavin always used to say, you don't rise to the occasion, but you fall back to the level of your training. Yep. And that seems to be a little bit what you're talking about there.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, if you're, you see it all the time, like if you practice bad habits and you're like, yeah, well, I'll do it right when I race, you won't do it right when you race. Like the amount of repetitions, and you probably don't even realize, but like on a week to week basis, the amount of repetitions you get at something, it becomes muscle memory. And so if you're continuously doing it wrong just because you're tired or you don't feel like doing it today, that's going to become what you will do in competition unbeknownst to yourself. And you'll wonder why you can't fix it. And that's because, you know, you don't do it in training correctly. And so that's like really important, that, you know, and that's probably the hardest part is, you know, cause you're not going to feel 100% all the time. You're not going to want to hold your breath. Sometimes you're not going to want to, you know, get the sneaky, like fast turn. You're going to take a little cup of tea break at the wall, but it's so that those are really the important moments, and I guess kind of what defines maybe the great from the little level below is things like that, you know, the day-to-day stuff where you're making that decision over and over again to be excellent.
What are you thinking about in the last 10 meters and the last 5 meters? What's actually going through your head at that specific moment?
You gotta go. Basically, I haven't actually watched the race back yet, so it'll be interesting to see if I watched it back, do I remember anything? But I couldn't see what was going on this side of me, but knew that Tatiana was probably going fast, and I could see the Chinese. I was just full in, like kind of watching the Chinese girl on the corner of my eye. And like while I was swimming, I could see that it's hard in breaststroke because you don't breathe to the side, so you're not you don't really know what's going on. You can see splashing, and then that might mean that they're beside you, might mean they're behind, could be ahead of you. And I could definitely see she was right there beside me. So I was like, shit, I have to go. I'm going to catch her. Cause that's kind of like the way that I've been training and visualizing races is that it doesn't matter what happens on the first 50. Cause I'll have the back end speed to catch anyone. That's kind of the way my training and racing has been going. And so I was kind of just trying to, you know, even though I'm burning, I think I used up maybe a little bit too much energy on the first 50. And so I was definitely burning a little bit, and I was like, no, you just got to go. You've got to hold in there. We're nearly there. You've got to go. So that's kind of what I was thinking. And then touched the wall and could see immediately that she had gotten second. And so it was kind of like looking at my block, cause they have the three like little red dots, or the 1, 2, 3 blocks have these red lights that light up. So it kind of tells you first, second and third before you even look at the board. And so I was just so scared, like almost not wanting to look to see if I was fourth or third. Like I didn't know, but was happy with the result then.
That feels like a lifetime. Obviously it's split second. It's instantaneous, but you have to touch the board and then there's the bit where you look up. Did that take forever?
Yeah, no, it definitely did. Like that is so funny because like I remember very little from the race, but then that like that moment is like ingrained in my brain. Like I look over and I see two dots, and then I'm like, oh, looking at my block, I see the three. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I don't even really believe it. And then that's when I turn around and look at the board to like make sure actually a three beside my name. So,
how have you not watched it back? It's like it's a great memory. Most people don't watch back things because it's a bad memory.
No, yeah, I don't know. I think I didn't want to watch it until I was done racing because I knew there'd be a lot of motion behind it. And then I think I just kind of got carried away with everything else we were doing, and I haven't just taken a second. I know I'll probably start crying if I watch it again.
That's okay.
That's been this, yeah.
We'll do a watch along.
But yeah,
it is incredible though, because it is the start of the best Olympics we've ever had, and it's not that it was unexpected in that everybody had hope that you were going to be able to do it, but it is a hundredth of a second either way. That it's kind of, it is such a magical moment for the country, and that surge of emotion that you feel, everybody else felt too.
Yeah, no, it was great to be able to do that, and you know, any medal is good, but it's definitely really exciting to know that, you know, you're the one that kind of kicked it off and started, and then sure, we were flowing after that with medals for the next couple of days, which was really exciting. But yeah, no, it was almost nice to kind of like you said, it was a little bit unexpected. I don't think as many people maybe knew, like probably hopeful, but it wasn't as much of a like, oh yeah, Mona's going to get a medal, which I kind of like it like that. Like I knew in my head that was what I was going for. And I like, that's what me and Dr. Joe, that's my sports psychologist, we've been, you know, sitting down for the last year, going to win a medal, going to win a medal. Like we're going to win. And so like for me, it like I was shocked that it actually happened, but I've been talking about it for so long that it seemed like inevitable almost. And of course that's not the case. Like it was so close, but no, it was really exciting to be on that train, and then to get everyone else kickstarted and be a part of a group of athletes that have been the most successful for Ireland. Like that's really exciting.
I don't know. We had Daniel on yesterday, and he has a very different attitude to sports psychology from you. He said the final sports psychologist he worked with said, "You don't really need me. You're borderline delusional, and you'll be grand without a sports psychologist." You obviously have embraced it and really enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I do. And I think it depends on who you work with too. Like I really clicked with Dr. Joe, he works with the University of Tennessee. And we do have a great time talking. And I love the visualization piece. I think that's really important for me. And I do get prepared before, like, I think it just calms my nerves and helps me prepare better and be organized. And I mean, I've been doing it for the last 4 years with him, definitely locked in a lot more this year on doing extra stuff, but it's been a part of my routine for a while now. And I just think it adds a little bit of, I want to say nervous system training, you know? So like, if you do get nervous, you kind of know, well, I can prepare for this. You know, I've felt this before. And even just for relaxing when you're done racing and you have to go to sleep and then get up and race again, you know, like it's important for those things too. And just being able to kind of train the mind a little bit better.
It's really interesting listening to you talking about the bits of improvement that you can still make when you watch back your opponents. We had your coach, Matt Kredich. Am I getting this pronunciation correct? He was on a couple of weeks ago. And he was already very excited about what's coming for the next year. It feels like it's great for you to have the next year looked after in your head, that it's not like an immediate stop after the Olympics, right? I actually have massive life decisions to make. You can kick that can down the road a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm definitely excited to take a little break from swimming first and then be able to come back and kind of jump straight into it, because I don't think I would want to, like, I'm not one to ease into things. I'm going to want to be kind of back going in the swing of things, doing 9 sessions a week straight away. And I'm going to be wondering where my aerobic capacity is after I take 3 or 4 months off. But I'm definitely excited to be able to take a break and then come back kind of fresh and jump straight into it.
Cause I think it was after the Champions Park, we got to briefly chat with you and asked about the next Olympics, and you just burst out laughing. I was like, no way. The sense was, I'm definitely not doing this again. But it feels like maybe you're changing your mind a little bit.
Yeah, I'm I'm definitely more on the maybe now. I know I'm not going to make a decision now. Like, I can't, kind of like what you said, you know, it would be selfish and crazy of me to decide on another Olympics based on what I'm experiencing right now, because winning another medal is not confirmed. And so I'd need to go back training and see, you know, do I still love training? Do I still love that, you know, the 99%, because that would have to be the reason that I choose to go back. And so I'm going to park that decision and leave it at a maybe for now and see, kind of take it 1 year at a time. Definitely not planning another, you know, 4 year plan. I'm going to just kind of leave it a little bit more relaxed and let myself kind of see how it goes. And you never know, I could be in LA. It's definitely not out of the realm of possibility. You know, I could still be fast. I could still be swimming. But it's definitely interesting because, you know, coming up to 2024, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, like, no, I'm definitely done after 2024. And then you get closer to it and you're like, oh, I'll probably do one more year after 2024, but definitely not 2028. And then you get closer and now you're done with 24 and you're like, ah, maybe I'll do 2028. So it's hard, you know, I mean, you could technically go forever. So it's tough to let go.
Yeah.
And think about what would be next, because this is all I've done for the last, you know, 12 plus years.
What's your degree? What are you studying?
I just graduated from my undergrad in kinesiology in May. And so I'm taking a semester off and I'll start my master's degree just for a one-year master's in the spring. So I'll be done December 2025.
And is that the same field?
It's a little bit more general. It's kind of like it's a leadership and communication master's, which can be pretty broad, which is nice because I don't really know what I want to do, but it's good to have the masters under my belt. So
yeah. And is it possible to become a full-time professional swimmer when you're finished for a couple of years? Is that the type of thing that an Olympic?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would be looking into doing and I definitely would want to stay in America. If I'm continuing to swim, I'll definitely be doing it there. Like, I've set myself up so well, I couldn't imagine moving somewhere else. It would just be about trying to figure out a different visa to stay in the country. But you can become a pro athlete. I know other people that have done it. You could also just get a work visa and be working while you're training. So there's definitely options.
Yeah. Okay. So it is a possibility. One last thing I wanted to ask about was, there's something very badass that the University of Tennessee do that left a lot of us with our hearts in our mouths who are slightly unfamiliar with it, but you don't get down on the blocks until the very last second. What's that about?
So we call it standing tall at Tennessee, and they did it way before even I came. And I remember watching, like, I would watch them compete before I went to Tennessee, and they'd be doing it. And Grace, like, you're going to have to start doing that. I'm like, I don't know if I can do that. But I love it now. Like, I think the more like beneficial side of it, not only that it looks really cool to be the last people standing on the blocks, but is you kind of get one last big like breath of air, like you fill your lungs fully. As you can see, it sometimes photos that are taken of me and it looks like I'm sticking out my belly because I'm doing one big belly breath before I go down. So that would be more the kind of like physiological side of it, like why we actually do it, is you're not crunched over before you start, so you're really like and then take your marks and go. And then also, you know, you can kind of get stuck on the block sometimes if you're down there for too long, whereas we kind of just go down and then go. So it's a little more of like a, you don't have to stop and then try and go from that position. And I like the idea of kind of looking down the lane where I'm going to be swimming before, like that's the last thing I see before I get down and go, is like, I'm steering straight down the lane, which is nice too. So it's a fun one. I do every once in a while when I get up at an international stage, I get worried. I think they all know about it now, and like different countries do it as well, so it's not as worrying, but sometimes I get worried that they're going to be like, please go down for the start. But no, it's nice. I do remember the first time I came home to Ireland and did it at Irish Trials, and I think they were a little bit confused, and then even the people beside me were kind of like, what is she doing? Because that's the other thing, like if someone beside you is down and they see that you're still up and they don't know that you do it, they kind of might be a bit confused for a second. And like that, all that's all it takes, a split second of someone's mental focus shifting. And that's like the mental side of it too. Like even in the call room, you know, like some people love to play the intimidation game in the call room just to try and get people psyched before they race. And it's just interesting, like all these different tactics that happen before you even dive in and race.
Do you enjoy that part of it?
I mean, I just sit in the call room and do my own thing. I enjoy watching other people, you know, do it and kind of laugh a little internally. I'm like, what the hell are they doing? But, you know, I kind of just do, I have a pretty set routine and I kind of just move away my way through that. I listen to some music so I don't really hear anything else that's going on. And then just hat, goggles, suit, a little bit of stretching, a little bit of jumping and out we go. So
Kyle Denny had a great piece a couple of years ago about the different types of personalities in the call room, like it's a, the tactics and the psych outs, and it's fascinating to see the different approaches to it, because obviously no eight people are going to be the same. They're all going to have a different approach, and imagine, like, it's like on a GA pitch, someone's going to try and psych you out, another person will try and get physical, someone else will just get on with their job. So it's imagine it's very, very interesting. It'd be a real, like a real social study in there if you could get in there.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And I would have been someone that used to be very set on my routine. I'm flexible now, but like before going to America, like I didn't want to talk to anyone in the call room. And I feel like you have the people that want to talk and the people that don't. And you nearly, if you talk to the people that don't, it'll mess them up. And the people that want to talk, if they're sitting in there quiet and they have no one to talk to, that'll mess them up. So it's funny, like I'm a bit better now that depending on the race, like if I'm in there with a friend or like, when we went down to race on the Saturday, like I don't bring my phone or my music because I know that we're going to be chatting away and that's grand. Like, so I will, like, I can kind of be a bit more flexible now, and it's not going to be like, I didn't do my set 20 minute routine, like of listening to this song. Like it's more kind of all like, I can deal with different scenarios now, which is nice. But oh, it's so entertaining to see what different people do. Like some people don't sit, some people don't wear any clothes, some people wear loads of clothes. Like it's very interesting.
What's the last song you listen to before you go on the blocks?
It changes all the time. I couldn't even give you one. It depends on my mood. For the 200, I have to listen to kind of like happy, chirpy music, like something pop or like relaxed, because I'm already just like so tense for the 200. I get a lot more nervous for that race than I would the 100. And then for the 100, I can kind of, sometimes it's rap, sometimes it's techno, like it just depends. But I can get a lot more like hyped for that race and kind of push my nervous system higher and be a little bit more jittery for the 100 because I can handle it. Whereas for the 200, if I'm not jittery, I nearly like freak out on the blocks, like, oh. So it changes depending on what race I'm doing.
And why is there such a difference between the 200 and the 100?
I've always had a heightened nervous system response with the 200, even as a kid. I think it doesn't really make sense because I'll do hard sessions and train, and I know it's going to hurt, but I think like in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, this is going to be really hard. Like this is going to be really tough. Like the 100 is over in such a quick amount of time down and back. Whereas the 200, there's a little bit more tactic to it. And if you mess it up, there's just a lot more kind of thinking involved, and I don't want to say you're rolling the dice. Sometimes I feel like I am, like I don't have a perfect feel for how to go out and how to finish it yet. So I think there's just a lot more unknown, I guess, in my mind. And so it's very easy to push myself over the edge and be in that negative mind space before I even get up on the blocks. Than it is for the 100. The 100's kind of just like race, just go. And I think I'm a lot more trained to do the 100 now. Like I just kind of know how to do it, and I'm pretty confident that my body will do what I know how to do. Than I am in the 200.
And it took you all the way to the bronze. We did have Dara Lynch in, and he was showing us his bronze. They've taken it back off him. They had to give him a new one. Is yours still intact?
It's probably can't see it on. It is intact, but it's not doing too great. It's getting more, I don't even know, corrosion by the day, sadly. But hopefully I'll get a new one too. I'm hoping that they're going to fix the issue figure out what's going on and then maybe give everyone a different one that's better.
Another day out.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see.
And maybe a watch along party so you can watch the race again.
Yeah.
Amanda, it's been brilliant talking to you. Thanks so much. You made the country so proud. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Off the Ball Breakfast.